Right, I'm on the hotline today to Australia to Ben Cray. Thanks very much for agreeing to talk to us today, Ben.
Oh, right. First good of to all, meet you, Simon.
Yeah, you too. Basically, can you tell us what you do for a living?
Well, right now I punt for a living. Basically, most of my stuff is on harness racing, which is probably not so big in obviously in England. I think they have it in Ireland or something like that over there, but it's quite big in Europe, obviously. But you know, commonly known as the trots in Australia, and I do quite a bit on greyhounds as well, and then probably 10% just on some other sort of trading sport and whatever else. But basically, my focus has always been trots, and that's my specialty. And I'm getting right into the for the greyhound racing as well at the moment.
Okay, so we'll talk a bit more about the intricacies of trotting and stuff in a bit, but we'll go back to a bit of your background. Your first involvement punting, I assume, was as a punter, was it?
My first involvement punting was probably 9 months before I was born, conceived at Harold Park Trots one Friday night, I imagine, when Dad got the trifecta, something like that. But seriously, I've been going to the track, you know, ever since I was a kid. Dad was a hobbyist greyhound trainer, loved going to the trots and the races, and you know, at least twice or three times a week I'd be going to the track with them. So brought up on it, you know, obviously punting as a kid and whatever else. All sort of till probably near enough to 20 years ago when I sort of decided to sort of try and make it a bit professionally and become a bookmaker.
Yeah, so that's interesting. So you decided to do your business on the other side of the fence as a bookie. So what was life like as a greyhound bookmaker?
Well, you know, I was sick of losing just as a punter, and I always saw the bookmakers driving around in Porsches and whatever else and thought, I'll give that a go. So I had a mentor that taught me how to do it. I was always very good at maths, etc. And basically, the cheapest license you can get in Australia is to become a greyhound bookmaker. So that's why I decided to do that, even though trots was probably my passion. And I started out 3 days a week in country New South Wales at tracks like Cessnock, Singleton, Warhope, you know, 3-4 hour drive to get there. But it was sort of right at the end of, I guess, the halcyon days of bookmaking. You know, there was only probably a couple hundred people on track, and the tracks I went to, I was pretty much the only bookmaker on track. So it was a quick, you needed to learn quick, basically.
Yeah, were there plenty of punters that used to take your pants down?
Oh, look, it wasn't too bad. There was probably, you know, five or six guys that you'd have to worry about. The rest were sort of all just your trainers having their $10 and $20 on stuff. But there was obviously, you know, smarts around in that day and age, and you got to know them pretty quickly, yeah.
So were you an opinionated bookmaker? Did you do your homework, or did you just bet to figures?
No, I did the form beforehand and rocked up on the track. And yeah, as I said, 95% of the time I was the only bookie on track. There was probably, because it was just, you know, it was just wasn't happening anymore like it used to be at sort of the start of corporates coming in, I guess, very, very early stage and stuff like that. So most of the time I just did my own form, and then one day a week I actually went to one of the greyhound tracks but fielded on the gallops on a Saturday. So the major races at Randwick or Flemington or something like that. And basically I just got the prices off one of the professionals on that was giving them out on the day, and I sort of started with that as my prices, then just made a book, which is completely different to how it works these days.
So you were the only bookie on the track, but you still had to turn it in. Was it that bad in the end?
Yeah, look, we were, you know, we might have held $600-$700 a race, I guess. So by the time you're putting the time in, paying your fees and paying someone to come with you, you know, it wasn't that we were losing money, but I wasn't making money. And 2 years of doing that was really good introduction onto that side of the fence. And like I said, it wasn't that we were losing money, but we just weren't making enough money. And I didn't have enough money behind me to go to the next level, to go to the races or something like that as a bookmaker. So that's when I decided to approach one of the biggest bookmakers in Australia, Alan Scander, and asking for a job.
Was that on course or off course?
No, that was off course in Darwin, and his company, he was just starting a new company up, and I saw it advertised. He was in Melbourne. I lived in Sydney, which I don't know if you know, to the interesting is of Australia, but that's a good 12-hour drive or an hour flight away.
I've done it.
And and he was starting a business up in Darwin called Betstar, and they were looking for people, and I put my resume in and gave him a bit of a background, and he said, well, you know, hopefully we can get to meet one day. And I said, well, how about I fly down tomorrow? And he was that impressed that I actually came down that day to see him that he gave me a job. And 6 weeks or 2 months later or something like that, I was the first person in his Darwin office.
So how eye-opening was that sort of business to you?
Look, that was that was incredible. I'd never sort of – he was one of the biggest bookmakers in Australia at the time, and I'd never seen or even believed such figures could go churning through an office. And we grew from three or four people in that office to 30 or 40 staff pretty quickly, and I learnt a great deal there about the way he bookmaked, you know, completely different to the only way I knew, which was my way. And I think I was there for probably, I don't know, two or three, maybe 3 years in Darwin. Learning off one of the best.
So what would his game have been? Would he stand horses for colossal amounts of money, or would he try and make a book?
I think he was one of the, he was actually one of the innovators of what happens now in the fact that you just played heads. Obviously there was guys doing form in there and whatever else, but it was a let's play heads type of game. You know, he'd have a sort of a limit to stand things for, but if a bloke was doing his money on the day, he always gave that guy a chance to get out, basically. So he would play heads, you know. So and back then, everyone was actually bookmaking still then, and we were still doing that to an extent, but we still did play heads. So if someone was losing, he would stand the next bet from that person for a little bit more than possibly usual. So I think he was one of the first people to actually do that.
Was learning how people punt quite a good grounding for becoming a punter yourself, a successful punter?
Oh yeah, look, you know, I thought I knew everything as a pickle punter. And then I learnt other things on the bookmaking side when I went there myself, and then I went to Allen, and then I worked for another couple of bookmakers after that, and I just took a lot of everything from everyone, and I'm still learning, you know. But basically the staff that I work with there were all very good, and they knew little things, and then I talked to people that were clients, or I'd sort of understand how they bet and on the other side of things, and a lot of everything like that has helped me get where I am today.
Now, you mentioned at the beginning about your passion is harness racing. So you landed the plum job with Bet365, who are a familiar name over here as well, 2013. So tell us a bit about harness racing, the nuances of it, and why you love it so much.
Why do I love it? I was probably brought up on it. I think it's the most exciting sport to watch, the racing code to watch live, you know, probably not so much now with the tracks where they are, but back when I was brought up at a place called Harold Park in Sydney, which was the main track, it was right on top of the track. You know, they do sort of two or three laps for a race, and it was exciting. It was at night time. It was in the middle of the city, you know, like it was just really exciting sort of sport to watch, I think. And I think once it's in your blood, it's something that sort of stays there forever.
One of the bookmakers I've interviewed from the UK, that there is sort of trotting, but it's sort of held at a very amateur sort of level in fields and things like that. And they used to put the trotting on from France and places like that if the weather was bad, before the all-weather racing. And what used to perplex the punters was the horse that they backed in front was disqualified for running.
For galloping. Yeah, well, that happens still in Europe. We have a little bit different rules here. We have like a relegation rule, or you know, a horse can protest if another horse gallops. But basically, if they're out of their gate, because they are actually, there's two different kinds. They are pacers or they are trotters. So there's two different kinds of events there. But yeah, you can be disqualified if you don't do the correct gate. That's correct.
Okay. Now, how big is the punting market on the trots compared to, say, the horse racing or greyhounds, etc.?
It's terrible. The way that the market is at the moment in Australia, it is really bad, and it is really hard to get on. I'm not the biggest punter in the world. I'm, you know, just medium-sized punter. I'm obviously bigger than just your regular Joe on a Saturday, but I'm nowhere near the biggest punter in the world, and I struggle to get on. There are rules coming into Australia now for minimum bet laws, which do help, which means you can get on to win $500 at a company after a certain time of the day. But that really doesn't sort of assist us when the odds go up a day or two before and the prizes are gone anyway by the time we are actually allowed to bet. So at the moment, there are probably five companies that will bet me before the minimum laws kick in to win $500. The tab's probably a little bit more. But basically, we have to wait until these times kick in, and it's just becoming harder and harder. And that's not that I really want to become a much more larger scale punter, but I really don't have the option to anyway in that field. So trots is probably, you know, 5% of the market of the whole of the gambling market in Australia, if that.
Okay, so you decided to go pro punting in 2014, so you stood the test of time. Yeah. Did you spot, when you were working with bookmakers, did you spot a niche or an edge which made you decide to take what is quite a big plunge?
No, I worked for Escanders, and then I worked for another couple of companies, and 365 was the last company I worked for. I was there for a year with them before they actually started in Australia, and about a week before they opened, I cracked the shits at the boss and left, and my wife said, don't worry about it. You know, I was on a very good salary there, and she said, don't worry about it. We're not here to go and work for someone you don't want to work for. And I basically just left and started. And, you know, I didn't make enough money the first year, the second year, or the third year, but every year I've been getting better and better at what I do. And enough that the last sort of two or three years I haven't had to do any other sort of work. So when I left, I started my own tipping company and did some consulting work for Betfair. And I still do a little bit for Betfair as well and for some other bookmakers and whatever else. But currently now, for the last two or three years, I'd be comfortable enough that I wouldn't have to do any other paid work. So it has taken a long time to get to where I am, and a lot of fine tuning. And I'm still tuning and working out how to do stuff. You know, I still like to talk to people and learn different things, because the minute you stop learning, I think you're full of it here. You know, you've got to keep learning. So, yeah.
The end of part one, we talked about your decision to go pro punting. You talked that you're a married man. So how many times, how many moments of doubt have you had, and how many times have you actually regretted the decision not to keep your safe and secure job working for somebody and go pro punting?
Look, I've got a fantastic wife. We've been married for 17 or 18 years or something like that now. And the one thing, we don't have any kids, so we're unlucky in that aspect, but we're also lucky in that we can do what we want for ourselves. And the one thing that the two of us have always stated is that we never want to go to work and hate it. So I've never regretted it. I've never regretted not getting it. At times I wish I did have enough, you know, some paid work to pay the mortgage when you're going through a bad run, but I've never regretted it once, not one bit. And I can't imagine ever going back to work for someone again. So, yeah. So, you know, it's a team effort here, even though my wife does nothing to do with what I do. She's every bit as part of it, because she's the one that wanted to support me when I would become a bookmaker to start with, which is a huge plunge. She moved to Darwin with me when I got the job at Escanders. She moved to Wollongong when I got the next job. You know, she's followed me around and supported me. And when I said that I wanted to leave this job, wasn't happy there anymore. Not even a discussion about it. She just said, just leave. Something's going to come up. Something will come up. And something always comes up. So.
What about, I've spoken to quite a few professional punters, and the practicalities of being one, i.e. getting a mortgage, getting any sort of, is that, how have you dealt with things like that?
Impossible. Funny you say that. I'm actually just right at the moment trying to do something like, I've owned my house here for 3 years, and I had to get my mum and dad to go guarantor on the house. So basically it doesn't mean anything except that they've just guaranteed that we'll pay the loan. you know, in 3 years I'm miles ahead on my mortgage, whatever else, and I'm actually right in the process of trying to get them off so I can have it under my name. But if I wanted to go and get a new loan for to upgrade my house or something, it'd be just impossible because no one wants to know what you do. It doesn't matter how much money you got in the bank. Doesn't matter how far ahead you are of your mortgage. They don't want to know why you've or how you've paid your mortgage on time every week for the last 3 years. It's all about the taxable income. So yeah, it's impossible. I can't even get a credit card for $500. Not that I want one, but I can't even get a credit card for $500. So those type of things do make it quite tough, to be honest.
Okay, so I won't go into the your techniques for harness racing because it's not, you know, really a sport here, so people can learn from. But you've told me that you've diversified into backing greyhounds as well, which is still a very popular sport in the UK. So what is your angle on the dogs?
I look, to be honest, I don't think it really matters whether it's trots, dogs, gallops, sport. I think the main things, the main principles are all the same in that you've got to have the best, you've got to have fantastic discipline. And for me, staking is the key. Everything's about staking. It doesn't matter how good you are at finding winners. There's an art to winning. So there's two different things. Finding winners and winning is completely different. So it doesn't matter if you've got, you know, you could have the paper in front of you with six of the eight winners and you may not still win for the day if you don't know how to bet and how to win. So for me, I spend as much time learning how to win as I do actually defining my arts. So that's sort of my first point I get. It doesn't matter what's your sport or what your code of choice of betting, and it's learning how to win and staking properly is huge for me. It's a huge thing.
You've preempted a question that's about I'll lead on to that. So what is your staking
plan?
What is your staking plan?
I have a bank anything that I do I price it to 100%. So it doesn't matter whether I'm doing greyhounds, trots, sport, anything like that, I need a price to 100%. And then I actually, personally, without getting too technical, I actually add 30% onto that. So I want to be getting better than 30% of 100% value, if that makes sense. So I need to be getting real good value, what I perceive is real good value before I have a bet. And my staking is dependent on what price I rate a horse or a greyhound or a galloper or whatever it is. So basically, the better the odds or the better the overlay that I'm getting, the better the result will be. So I have a bank. I bet to collect 5% of my bank for each bet, and that's according to my rated price. So I don't take any notice. I don't bet to win a certain amount off the price I'm receiving. It's on the price that I market.
Okay, so when you when you're pricing up these races, where do you start?
So again, I think it's the same with anything. There's a speed map. It doesn't matter whether it's trots, greyhounds, gallops. You know, you need a speed map. You need to know what's going to be where in the run, and then you've got to sort of work out whether it's going to be a fast, slow, or medium run race. For me, in trots, obviously speed map is everything because they've got a harness on the back of them, so it's very hard to run past other horses. Greyhounds, you know, probably 80% of greyhounds lead and win. Gallops is obviously not as much, but if it's a slow tempo and you're on a leader, you've got a better chance than if it's a slow tempo on a back marker, etc. So for me, speed maps are really important. Knowing the horses inside and out, or the greyhounds inside and out, you know, I can sort of tell you what horse did what for its last five runs, whether it was well backed, what price it was in the market. I don't use a database whatsoever. I watch 100 races a bloody week, so I just remember them. That's unfortunately, I can't remember what my wife said yesterday, but I can remember that sort of stuff, and I get into trouble for that. So, so knowing everything inside and out, vital things like drivers and trainers, or jockeys and trainers, or trainers in the greyhounds are majorly important, and and then it's basically a lot of feel. It's, you know, having priced 100, 150 races for the last 15 years of my life, it's just second nature now. I can basically price it to 100% without even having to to add up the figures. You know, I can get somewhere close there. I do have spreadsheets to do it, but I can get close to that, just naturally. Yeah, and then there's a lot of feel about it. I'm not a database guy. A lot of people are, but I just think that a computer can tell you a lot of things, but it can't tell you the feel of a race. So that's a lot for me as well.
Do you make sure that you aren't influenced? You make sure you don't see anybody else's prices or Betfair before you do it all?
Well, I do all my stuff at least a day in advance. So there is no, for the particular stuff that I do, there is no prices already out. The form guides that I use, there's no prices on them, so I don't look at anything. For us, funny you say for Betfair, because for us in Trots and Greyhounds, there's literally no liquidity in Betfair until 2 minutes to go. So Betfair doesn't become an option until 2 minutes to go for us. So it's irrelevant, Betfair. I don't want to look at anyone's prices. I don't want to speak to anyone about it. I have all my form done with prices done before I look at the prices. I don't use the market at all to influence me. A lot of people do. But the way I see things is the reason I bet is because I believe I'm better than the market. If you're using the market, that's someone else's opinion. So I'm here, it's my money, I'm going down by the sword by my opinion.
Okay, so if you made something a 3-to-1 chance and you saw it markedly drifting, would you have more on more on, or would you start smelling a rat?
It's a good question. Basically, you know, if I've marked it 3-to-1, then I'm having X amount of dollars on it. And I probably would have already had my bet, but if it is drifting, I can't help myself but to have more on, because my average price becomes higher and I just back myself. So, you know, sometimes you're going to be wrong, but again, I'm just backing myself, what I know, and if the price goes out, I'm probably going to have something better on. So my average price is better.
So is everything you do, like on a spreadsheet, do you go back and analyse your bets, where you went wrong, where maybe you could improve?
Yeah. Definitely. I'll definitely go and have a look. And if it did drift from 3-to-1 to 6-to-1 or 7-to-1 or something like that, then I'll probably want to go and have a look at the form and go, oh yeah, you're right. That was why that happened. Or vice versa. If I got beat by something that was 3-to-1 into even money, I want to go and find out why I got beat. So yeah, definitely do analyse what I did wrong and hopefully what I did right as well.
Okay. And also you mentioned when we talked before, sports trading rather than betting. Was that just a terminology, or do you actually trade sports rather than bet?
Yeah, I don't bet on them because I don't have time to do the proper homework and to price things. Because again, I'm price sensitive. So I'm not going to sit there and watch, you know, we'll use an example from you guys. I'm not going to sit there and watch a football game for 90 or all the football games, have it all the notes, blah, 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 price them up and see whether I'm getting overs or not. So I just don't have the time to do that. So NFL is pretty big here in Australia for traders, or cricket or something like that, you know. So while I'm working, there might be a 5-day test match on here, you know, Australia versus England or something like that. So while I'm working, I've got the cricket on in the background. I might, you know, Australia might be batting on a nice wicket or something like that. So I might back them and then lay them a bit later short or something like that again. But it's really only probably 10% of my business. And it's something that I do on the side, probably to keep me entertained as much as anything. But, you know, it would probably only make up 10% of whatever I earn for the year. But and NFL is another thing that I just love watching. So while I'm there, I'll try and trade the match. Like I said, cricket or maybe something like rugby league, which is another thing that I enjoy here in Australia. But other than that, I don't actually bet to just hold a bet on sport, because it's not something that I specialise at. And again, I don't price it up properly.
So would you have a strategy that you always use, like lay the draw to begin with or at the home team or something like that?
Again, it's just a feel thing. It's just a feel thing. You've obviously got an opinion going in, but I sort of prefer to... let's say it's cricket. I mean, it's very easy to make money pretty quickly if just by a team winning the toss on what's going to be a good deck. You know, you can just back them and lay them again in 5 minutes and make a little bit of money if you wanted to. But I prefer, if I'm going to be involved though, to lay something short and hopefully that would drift out and you can get out that way. That way, if you're wrong, you haven't actually done too much money. You know, if you've laid $1.30 run or $1.40 or $1.50 in the run, it's better than trying to back something maybe at $5 or $6 and hope they fit. You know what I mean? So I don't like to risk too much to get into a position early. But again, it's not a huge thing that I do.
Okay, right. Now, what I would like to know, you said you've got a very understanding wife. Everyone that bets knows that you are inevitably going to have a bad losing run. Yep. Now, what is your mental coping strategy for them?
She likes to think she knows when I've won or lost, with the mood that I come out of the office with. So, but the longer I do this, the better I am at coping with losing runs, and the better chance I am at not, you know, doing anything silly like trying to chase anything afterwards or anything like that. It's just not in me anymore. When I was young, I used to bet on the next to go button. I was down the pub with the boys betting on whatever was going on, and if I was losing, I'd try and bet more to get out, blah blah blah. But now, if I have a losing run, I know what I'm going to bet at the start of the day. I know what I'm going to back, and then, you know, one of my favourite sayings is that they're on again tomorrow. So there's no use chasing what you've done in that day. There's no use getting depressed. You know, it's just a bad run. It's going to happen, and they're on again tomorrow.
Okay, right. So you did your apprenticeship, obviously, as a losing punter.
Apprenticeship. Yeah.
I think everybody, you know, how many years do you think you were doing your money before you had that eureka turnaround sort of mindset or ability?
Until I left 365 6 years ago.
So
not a winning punter.
So was working for bookmakers actually was the catalyst for you to turn it all around?
I was probably still a losing punter even when I was working for bookmakers. I just didn't have the discipline to... I wasn't a disciplined person, and I'm the first to admit it. Anyone that's ever talked to me will know that. I knew how to win. I knew what to do to win, but I didn't have the discipline. I guess it was always because I had the guarantee of a salary behind me. I didn't care, but it wasn't necessary. When I left and decided to do this profession, it became necessary to be good at it, because I don't think I can ever go back to a bookie now. I'm not sure anyone would have me anymore. So it's now necessary that I win, and that's the word that I use. And my wife was very hesitant about me doing this when I left, even though she supported me. She now knows that this is it for the rest of my life. But again, it's that word I use. It's necessary. So, you know, I don't want to. I can't be all disciplined. I can't have crack the shits. I can't just go and bet on anything. I don't even have a $5 bet down at the pub when I go down with my friends anymore. Or if I do, if I go and spend $50 when I'm down there with them, it goes on my spreadsheet the next day and a dead set. There's a column there under pub money, and I put it on there how much I've won or lost when I go down there. So it's got to that stage. That's how disciplined I am.
Yeah,
I can't even watch a footy match now and have a $20 bet on it. Or if I do, it goes on my spreadsheet as, you know, I'll put it on as a fun bet or whatever. But it goes on there, so at the end of the year, I know that I've done $800 worth of fun bets, and that'll go. Next year, I'll go, well, I don't want to do that $800, you know. And I remember, you know, and that's why I put it on there, because without that discipline, I can't do this.
Bookmakers will be watching this, praying that punters don't emulate that discipline, because that is the Achilles heel, isn't it?
I think it's happening a little bit more, though. I really do. I think as people are betting at home and they do have access to spreadsheets and whatever else, I know a lot of people do keep a lot more records. Whether they are accurate or not is another thing. But when you used to go to the track, or you just go to the pub, you know, you just, the more beers you had, you'd go to the ATM, take money out and bet and whatever was whatever. But I do think people are becoming a little bit more switched on. Not saying that's necessarily accurate or not, but they do have the tools to become a bit more switched on.
So where's most of your business done? Is it bookmakers, exchanges?
For me, I like to bet early, as soon as the market comes out, for a couple of reasons. I think that the bets I'm having are probably going to firm, so I want to be the one getting the top price. And secondly, I don't want to be in front of the computer the whole day. Make no bones about it. I love to go on the golf. I love to get on the beach. So So I want to get my bets on as early as possible and be done with it. So 95% of my business are actually done at the bookmakers that will bet me, and 5% is probably done at Betfair late. If I'm sitting around, you know, tonight, for instance, and I am watching my races, some of my horses might get out to a price that I want to be on, so I will back them then. But no, 95% of my business is done as soon as the markets come out at the bookmakers.
Now, one of my previous interviewees, I believe you know Matt Barker.
I know Matt, yes. Yeah. I had a game of golf. He was a partner of my golf cart about 6 months ago.
Now, do you have like a network of pro punting mates? And do you get your heads together and have a little brains trust and, you know, sort of throw ideas off each other and for particular events, that sort of thing?
Definitely do. And I've got a good group of mates that all do it for a living. Probably we don't with him so much because he's a professional cricket trader, and it's only something that I do as a little additive to my stuff. So I'm not even close to what he does on cricket. But I do have mates that are professional in gallops, some other trots, greyhounds, etc. And we're always putting our heads together, not necessarily to back the same things, but with ideas or whatever. Or, you know, Twitter these days, a lot of successful people tipping on Twitter, even after they've backed them. That's not necessarily I'm going to go and follow them, but I'd like to know what they've backed, and I'll go and have a look why they've backed it, and that might sort of influence me next time about that horse, or you know, person A might have backed this horse against my horse today, and even though his horse did no good today, I'll remember that next week. There must have been a reason this guy was on this, and I'll try and work out why he was on it, and I might be able to find out why he was on it. So I do have quite a good network of professional punters in the various fields that I do, and I am asking questions all the time, and they come to me sometimes and ask questions, or even if it's just to have a chat or have a beer, but, you know, about various things. So definitely do, not necessarily with Matt. Myself and Matt basically have one thing in common, and that is gym. So and a game of golf.
I was lucky enough to actually meet him. He was in the UK, came over to watch and bet on the cricket. So do you attend sporting events that you've bet on? Would you go to the trots? Would you go to the greyhounds?
I don't live anywhere near a racetrack anymore. I live half an hour south of the Gold Coast, just in New South Wales. So probably twice a year I get to the trots, and maybe once every 5 years of the greyhounds now. But I usually go to the trots, maybe just to the one or two biggest meetings. I do some work for Betfair still, consultancy work for them, and we host a couple of events. We just hosted a really big one for the Trots Cup at the end of last year, I think it was, in Melbourne, where we had 300 people along, all sort of VIP for Betfair and stuff like that, and let them drink the house down, and so reward them like that. So, but basically, yeah, I get to one of those events only every cup, you know, twice a year or something now. But no one goes to the Trots in Australia anymore anyway.
There's the Australian racing showed overnight for nocturnal punters over here. Yeah. Is there a vast difference? Obviously, Australia is a vast country. So would racing in Darwin or the Northern Territory be different to racing in sort of New South Wales, for example, as in how it's, you know, if you were looking at it from a punting angle?
Oh, yeah, obviously, you know, your main cities are going to be better form related, et cetera. So obviously the further you go away from a main city, the worse horses are probably going to be. And then stuff like Darwin's on dirt as opposed to other tracks that are on grass. And, you know, it's always dry and hot up there as opposed to it can be, you know, today at Canterbury it was a complete bog track. So there's a lot of different things. But, yeah, definitely. It's definitely different and different. Probably different styles of racing in a place like Darwin too, where you've got to be right up on the speed, etc., or different sized tracks. I'm sure it's the same in England though.
So would people concentrate, you say you've got professional punter mates, would they concentrate on one area?
Yeah, definitely. And that's what I do too. I only bet in New South Wales. That's all I bet in at the moment. And but other people, yeah, they'll just bet in New South Wales or they'll be just in Darwin. Or there'd be only a handful of blokes that probably bet Australia wide. So mainly most of the people I know would have an area that they would bet in. And I guess it's just so you get to know the horses, the pool of horses or dogs or greyhounds, etc., sort of stay the same. It's like betting in Hong Kong or something like that. You know, they only have 300 horses there, and you get to know them, and the form sort of starts to stand up. Whereas if they're coming from everywhere, it makes it a lot harder to line the form up.
And is the TAB ever an option for you for punting?
The TAB is the best option for me for punting at the moment. So a lot of people don't like them, but for me, they give me three times more than anyone else lets me on. So hi, Tab, I love you.
That's the Australian version of the tote, pretty much, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the tote. So we have, the TAB has a totalisator, which is like parimutuel pools. I don't know.
Just call it the tote.
Yeah, if they have the tote, but then they also have a fixed odds option. So.
Right, okay.
So, yeah. And but nobody bets at the tote anymore. It's just dying.
Now, you mentioned Darwin. Now, you still got a pitch in Darwin as a bookmaker.
Well, look, one of my best friends is the only bookmaker in Darwin at the moment. And when the Darwin Cup comes on for the last 5 years, I go up and I run his second stand for him. But basically, it's we just go halves in it. But it's under his name. So I'm still a licensed clerk. I haven't got my license as a proper bookmaker anymore, but yeah, still a licensed clerk, and I go up there for the two meetings on the Saturday and the Monday, and field in the member stand there, and get my bookmaker's fix back again. And what I love it. I wish I could do it more often.
What's the on-course market like in Australia?
Well, for Darwin Cup, it's pretty good. On-course is, you know, normal type of on-course. It's nothing like it used to be. I think everyone's sitting at home on a computer now. And I know just from when I went to Darwin 5 years ago, my on-course hold is probably half as much now as it was 5 years ago. It's just I'll be sitting there with the best odds in the world flashing, because I've got a program called Dynamic Odds, which we use in Australia, which has all the odds for every bookmaker in Australia and a lot of them in England as well. Basically, so it's like having a ring for all the bookmakers there. And I'll be sitting there at Darwin with the best odds in Australia on a horse. I'll be $5 a horse, and everyone else is $4 in Australia. Bet365, the Tab, Sportsbet, all those big companies. And you'll see a bloke still punching near $100 on his phone, and he won't come to me with his cash. So it's a pretty hard game on course these days.
But the penultimate question, you were saying earlier that everything's pretty much the same when it comes to gambling. So people watching this, they like to be educated by people like you that are successful. What would be the main rule for a punter that you would impart?
Two things. If you want to be successful, you've got to have discipline and you've got to have good staking and discipline. Doesn't matter what you're betting on, you need those two things to win.
Okay. And finally, Ben, do you see yourself doing this in 10 years time?
I'll always do it to some extent. I'm not putting in 70 hours a week like I do at the moment. Everyone thinks that it's the world's best life. And don't get me wrong, I love it. But people only see me taking photos of myself on holidays or at the golf course. But that's in the they haven't seen the 6 hours work I've done beforehand, or still here till 11 o'clock at night doing the form for tomorrow. So I think I'll be doing it forever. But hopefully not 70 hours a week, yeah. I don't know what else I can do now. Maybe open a bar.
Excellent. Well, Ben Cray, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Simon. Thanks, mate.
You can follow Star Sports on Twitter at StarSports_bet, our Facebook page at StarSportsBet, and also view all our latest videos on YouTube at Star Sports. BeGambleAware.org. Over 18 only.